You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from
South Florida, Jim. Thank you for inviting me on.
Rick, the stock market, again, you know, we keep hitting new highs, it seems, every second day. How sustainable is this?
Yeah, and that's telling you something, by the way, that if you see the market has been down 2 days, there's no way you can't buy it, because if you look back going 17 years and try to find one instance where stocks were down more 3 days, well, even more than 2 days in a row, it's very, very rare. So I could say you almost can't lose buying that third day if it starts out weak. But yeah, stock market just keeps going up every day. And if you're a middle-class American, then you're acutely aware that the stock market has no connection to the real world that you're living.
When does the stock market start recognizing Main Street, or will it ever? It seems that wars, tariffs, extra health care costs, extra gasoline costs, none of that factors into the stock market.
Yeah, it doesn't really care. It's just a lot of 401k money that goes to the chimpanzees that manage that money. The chimps take other people's money and they just throw it at something. And if that weren't enough already, you get, you know, yesterday NVIDIA announced another, this is a second $80 billion buyback. It's open-ended. There's no time limit. So where's the logic for saying that someday NVIDIA will go down? And of course, it has a way of pulling so many other stocks higher. So yeah, I guess you could just pretty much plan on this bull market going on forever. And if you're, you know, 5 or 10 years old now, you'll get to see another, who knows, 80, 90, 100 years of bull market. And, speaking of which, you know, I've had this from a couple sources, one of which is my, a friend of mine who's a physician in New Jersey. He told me that if you live another 5 years, you'll live to be 100. And not only that, but people are going to be living, everybody who's getting born around now is going to live to be 120, but with the quality of life where it's not all about arthritis and diabetes and everything else. After you reach 70 or 80, you're going to be able to go bowling. And if you're in really good shape, you'll be able to play lacrosse and rugby when you're 100 years old. So we have that to look forward to.
Wow, not with my knees.
Now, your knees, I'm not quite sure I understand the medicine behind it. It's loosely held together by something called senogenetics, but it has to do with repairing cellular damage and essentially reversing the aging process. So, and it's come to me from two very good sources, people who know what they're talking about. And the one friend of mine, as I mentioned, he's a physician specializing in sports medicine. He says, just live another 5 years and you basically clinch 100.
Well, I know Doug Casey told us several years ago, if he can hang on for 10 years, we'll see parts of your body being grown in a petri dish. In Montreal, they're growing new lungs for people.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And when's the last time that Doug Casey was wrong about anything?
Well, I can't think of.
Exactly. I can't either.
So should we be investing in these biogenetic flesh tanks?
I guess so. I mean, it's at some point, they're going to have their vogue. They do. There's a lot of things going on there, a lot of ferment that investors who are kind of plugged in are finding. But at some point, maybe it'll reach enough. Nothing will ever top the AI mania, but companies that are involved in the more productive areas of 3D printing lungs and hearts and things, they're going to do well.
And all these young people obsessed with maintaining their, like 10-year-olds buying moisturizer. You know, when we were growing up, of course, your suntan protection was olive oil or baby oil.
You know, the smartest woman I knew, she was a girl in high school, Joan Baraccio, and she was, well, at one point Miss Nevada and a finalist in the Miss America competition, and she had that Northern Italian beauty. She had light skin, Italian father, Jewish mother, and no one knew more about skincare than Joan, and she used to sit out there with a reflector and baby oil. And I was naturally dark, so we used to have kind of a competition during the summer to see who could get darker. And I think she I'm not sure if she won, but she came close enough. But no one's seen her in a lot of years. So we're always learning. But you know, 50 years ago, everybody was smoking cigarettes and thinking you can't get too much suntan.
And also looking at the future, alcohol sales down across the board. Of course, Canada mostly boycotting American liquor right now with the trade war going on. But overall sales, people are looking at longevity. But for all that care, what are you going to do about the microplastics?
Are you talking about stuff that's in all our water?
In our water, our food, our fish?
You know what? I think the optimistic point of view is that we're adapting to it. And but, you know, I mean, when you look at cancer statistics, it's not like the huge, like the Texas Medical Center, for instance. If you go there and you see this kind of Manhattan-sized bunch of facilities that are all devoted to what some skeptics call slash poison and burn as treatment for cancer. We haven't really made much progress, but you know, it's a given really that we're making certain adaptations, and that may be the best way to do it. Our bodies will have to learn to tolerate more quantities of microplastics.
Humans are pretty tough. You look at how long people have lived, even though we drank and smoked a lot. So we must be pretty chemical resistant.
Well, we are. And I think it's obvious that your genetic traits, things you inherit from your mother and father, are very important in how your body reacts to certain carcinogens. And we all know from people who were asked the secret of their longevity when they were 105, well, typically they'll say everything felt that it was just good, shot a good Kentucky bourbon every night before I went to bed or something. But rarely do they say that they talk about some life of abstention that allowed them to live so long. But as near as I can determine, I have my mother's closest friends lives here in Palm Beach, and she's 100, she'll be 107, and she's doing great. And I tried to pin her down at lunch one day. You know, I call her Aunt Penny. Her name is Penny Virginia is her real name. So I said, how do you know, you're 106. We have regular lunches together, and I said, "How, you know, what is this? What's your secret?" And she said she really didn't know. She didn't have any secret, but as far as I can surmise, it's just her ability to kind of put life's stresses out of the way. And when we go to lunch, we don't talk about how terrible this world is and all the things that are impacting on us, and you know what they were saying on Fox News. We just talk about the good things. The pleasant things that involve stuff going on in our families and this and that. So I think it's her ability to kind of compartmentalize those things that are just even just a little irritating and push them out of her life. And she's done a good job, obviously.
We'll take a look at some irritants like the high price of crude right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, the price of oil remains very high. No sign of the impasse in the Strait of Hormuz being settled. And now we're hearing from worldwide organizations. This could lead to a massive food crisis in 6 to 12 months.
Well, no one believes the food crisis thing anymore, really. For sure, shipments of ingredients for fertilizer are definitely being curtailed in the Hormuz Strait, and that's going to be a problem. But I just never, you know, if you saw the movie The Hellstrom Chronicle documentary many years ago, it said the insects would eventually take over the earth. And I think the starvation stories are of a piece with that. And I just don't see food shortages developing in this world. But I do see much higher crude prices. And I've got a target of depending on which pattern I'm using, I like 120. That's the most kind of moderate price increase that I think we'll see. The key resistance is down there in the July NYMEX contract, somewhere around $104 and change. And it's pushed above that a little bit, kind of pulled back, but the damage is already done, and I think the trend will be up to at least 120. And, of course, if that coincides with the summer, quote-unquote, driving season, where the refiners usually they go full bore with gouging energy consumers, especially people who gas up, it's going to be hellacious. You know, you could see, who knows, $8 to $10 a gallon in California. And that surely has an impact on the price we pay for everything else. Everything gets to us by way of diesel trucks and ships and whatnot. There's an energy component in pretty much everything we consume. So if you put gasoline prices up that high, you'd think it would bring the economy to a grinding halt. But fortunately, the bright side is, since the stock market doesn't give a crap about that, all you have to do is hold stocks and you'll be just fine. You'll be able to even cash out some of your Nvidia shares to buy groceries if the price inflation in the lettuce bin gets that serious.
Now, the only tool that governments have to fight inflation is higher interest rates. Are interest rates going to go up?
There's no way, you know, to talk about loosening now. We're having the only place where we're not seeing inflation is out of Trump's mouth. You know, every month when we get, and it's not like we need the statistics to confirm what we're experiencing in our own lives. All you got to do is go anywhere where you buy things. And so we've got a wicked inflation ahead, and there's no way the Fed can ease right here. Absolutely no way. So I guess you could say we're looking at a runaway inflation. If they tighten, you can only imagine for all the things that I've told you will not affect the stock market, rising interest rates surely will. That's probably the only thing that's going to put the kibosh on the bull market.
Higher interest rates, higher mortgage rates. Is this going to further slow the real estate market?
I wouldn't say slow, just to be more exacting. I'd say it's going to crush the real estate market. You know, to go out there with home prices as inflated as they are right now, you know, little subdivisions and boondocks that you never even heard of, where homes sell for $600,000 to $800,000, to go at that, to be, let's say, a first-time buyer at a 7% mortgage, well, fortunately, the good news is nobody qualifies. There are no first-time buyers out there who can cough up a down payment, even if mommy and daddy take some sort of home equity loan on their $2.5 million Dacia in Southern California. So the my own forecast on a 10-year, the minimum we're going to see is just a tad over 5%. But I have one technical not an indicator really, but I use patterns, and I've got another pattern pointing above 6 on the 10-year. They're currently at 4.6%, and the bonds off correspondingly a bit. So we're going to see higher rates, and you know, mortgage rates were already pushing toward that 7% threshold, and it's just not going to get any cheaper. So, but again, don't worry, if the housing market gets crushed, it won't be that per se that finally ends the bull market. It will be the higher cost, not only of borrowing, but of servicing existing debt that's going to finally do it.
What's the story with gold and other precious metals?
Well, I think they're going to remain under pressure. You know, we're sort of, with respect to the effect of higher rates, we are staring down the maw of a huge debt deflation. And of course, this is something very different from the consumer inflation that we're going to be experiencing for some time. So, you know, there's no way to get around a deflationary endgame, because we've amassed debt that's simply unpayable, and I doubt that we're going to – I don't think hyperinflation is a – I don't think it's possible. Let me rephrase that. It is possible, but only remotely possible. And if you look at the example of Weimar or any other hyperinflation that's occurred in the past, you understand much better why we don't have the same mechanisms in place that created the Weimar hyperinflation in 1921 to 23. There you had complicity between the major employers and the government. The employers were actually authorized to print their own scrip if the boxcar full of payday dollars didn't show up. And I think I may have mentioned this years ago when we talked, but the main periods of hyperinflation in Germany in that period occurred when the printing presses broke down, or the presses that made Reichsmarks. During those periods, the employers did take the initiative to pay their workers in scrip, and that's where but we don't have any of that. We don't have sort of that kind of compact that existed between the government and the major employers. And the main reason you had the hyperinflation in Germany was because the government targeted employment above all things. You know, the Allies were in a real, almost a deflationary funk after World War One, and the Germans sort of knew the way back. They said, well, screw it, you know, we're just going to create enough money to maintain full employment. So although you didn't have that in England, and certainly not in the U.S., you did have it in Germany. Germany had a very robust economy until the hyperinflation crushed it. But I digress.
Aren't stable coins the same thing, companies making their own currency?
No, I mean, they're the opposite, really, because stable coin will have a tie to, up to this point, we've always said everything's tied to the dollar, which is the same as saying everything's tied to an instrument of debt. That's all the dollar is. It's an IOU. But stable coin aims to have a tie to let's call them treasury assets, but in reality, it's really kind of a stream of payments that supports the treasury, that funds the treasury. So stablecoin is kind of a hybrid between the old days, where you could sort of cash out your dollar bills for silver, for Morgan silver dollars or whatever, between that and total fiat money. So stablecoin is kind of an improvement on the dollar, and I guess the purpose of it is to take the dollar itself out of a global system that has worked very well over the years for the inefficient, including all of Europe. So we're kind of getting on a different track with stablecoin, and relative to the debt instrument that we call that's called the dollar, it's not a bad halfway solution.
Do we have any outlook on DeFi, where we have financing done that doesn't involve the banks?
Yeah, but be careful with that. You know, it hasn't reached its apotheosis of popularity yet, but we're going to be hearing a lot more about tokens. You know, tokens will be something that can do financing, particularly of commercial real estate, outside of the banking system. But the bad news is that's really kind of going direct to the public to take a stake in Manhattan office towers and San Francisco office towers. And you know that they're going to create the sort of economic climate where the Joe Sixpack is going to think this is the ticket to riches, to just own a small piece of depressed real estate in all these big cities. So it won't look like a swindle when it happens, but just keep that in mind when you talk about financing outside the banks. It's this token system that you're going to hear more and more about.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
I think my Aunt Penny, really. She's she's coming up on 107, and really, that I think her secret is that she just has a way of kind of tuning out all the negatives and try to live another 5 years, and you're more or less assured of getting to 100 if you can do that. So that's about it, and I guess I'll look forward to our next conversation, Jim.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thank you. It was delightful and always a privilege to connect to your vast audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at House Street. You can find us on YouTube at Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.